While creating a television pilot for a show about the cool kids for 20th Century Fox in 1993, writer-director Amy Heckerling literally went back to high school, Beverly Hills High School to be exact, to do research on kids in the 90s. It was a world she was familiar with, having hit the big time in 1982 with Fast Times at Ridgemont High, directing a script written by Cameron Crowe after he had gone undercover as a high school student. Heckerling wanted her main character to be positive and happy. She remembered reading the Jane Austen novel Emma in college and wanted to bring that rose-colored glasses perspective from Regency-era Britain to Beverly Hills. And so, Emma Woodhouse became Cher Horowitz, and an icon was born. Heckerling's agent, Ken Stovitz, read her finished pilot script and told her this was a feature. But the film executives at Fox told her this story was too female-oriented to attract a large audience, and the project went into turnaround. 6 months later, the script became the prize in a bidding war and was eventually won by Paramount Pictures. Filmed in 40 days on location in Los Angeles in November and December of 1994, Clueless stormed into theaters on July 19, 1995, and became a sleeper hit, marketed heavily on MTV and earning $88 million worldwide. It was well received by critics, with Heckerling winning the Best Screenplay Award at the National Society of Film Critics, and Alicia Silverstone winning Breakthrough Performance from the National Board of Review for her star-making turn as Cher. It's literally impossible to not think of Cher in her matching plaid jacket and skirt, white knee socks, and sigh of disgust as she dismisses high school boys when 90s nostalgia floods your brain. Could you ever forget Cher Horowitz? As if! I'm Violet Hammond, and this is Movieversaries. Welcome to Movieversaries. I'm your host, Violet Hammond. This is where we celebrate and sometimes reevaluate some of the greatest movies ever on a significant anniversary. On this episode, we're discussing Clueless, the trend-setting high school rom-com classic, on its 30th anniversary. And to help me discuss the film, an episode that has been in the works all year... The first person I wanted to record with when I got the opportunity to host episodes on my own for Movieversaries, it's my daughter, Daisy Hammond. Daisy, how are you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing just wonderful. How are you doing?
Considering we just had bagels and watched Clueless, I think we're having a pretty good day so far.
Perfect morning. 10 out of 10. No notes whatsoever. It was great. Would recommend to anyone interested.
Well, there you go. You heard it here, folks. Order bagels, watch Clueless. You'll have a 10 out of 10 morning. So as you will have heard in my intro, we will be discussing how successful this movie was. It was very commercially successful. And as we discuss together here, we'll talk about all of the impact that this film had on the industry and such. But the first question I will ask is the first question we ask all of our guests, and that is, what does this film mean to you?
Oh, boy. I mean, I think this is one of those movies where, like, I know we've watched it many, many times over the years, me and you, maybe with like some time in between, but this has always been a movie that you and I specifically have watched and enjoyed very much, and now we've kind of roped my little brother into it as well. Because he doesn't want to admit it, but he does think it's funny. Yeah, I just have very fond memories of us watching it together and laughing and enjoying everything about the aesthetics and the story and just having a really, really wonderful time together. So, yeah.
Yeah, totally. That's seriously when I was asked to join the team here at Movieversaries and to host episodes on my own. The first movie I chose was Clueless with you. Like, this was so, I'm very excited that we're closing out 2005 with the first thing I really wanted to talk about this year. So this is a really special episode for many reasons. This movie came out, we've done a couple of movies this year that came out in 1995, and as if you've been listening to the show, you know I graduated high school in 1995, so this was very much in my wheelhouse. The thing I was going to see at the movies, I've told you before, and you know, like, plaid skirts were definitely something I wore pretty much every day to school. Like, it is a very heightened 90s movie. We didn't actually dress like this, but it was close enough that it was very, like, understandable to me. It was definitely a good snapshot of what it was like to be a teen in the 90s. Maybe not in Beverly Hills, but it was an excellent snapshot of that. This also, because it is an adaptation of a story that's very important to us as well, it is an adaptation of Jane Austen's Emma. And we watched Emma earlier this year after one of our Clueless watches to kind of compare and contrast, like, when it was fresh in our mind. And we discussed at that point that we think Clueless is probably the most successful modern retelling of an older story. Do you still feel that way?
I do feel that way. I think it's probably the most successful modern retelling of Emma. I mean, there was a big boom, I feel, in, like, the late 90s, early 2000s of, like, let's adapt classic literature into these movies. And I think a lot of them were really good, but this one stands out to me as, like, this is a really creative way of sort of refreshing this classic story to fit that modern audience. So I do think it's still, it's very successful in that regard. It's not a perfect one-to-one, but I think it is wonderfully inspired by that story.
Yeah, I agree. I think it has more one-to-ones than some other movies, such as, we both love 10 Things I Hate About You, and it's a very good adaptation of Taming of the Shrew, but you can't pick out characters except for, like, the main leads there. You can't really pick out the characters in the supporting cast and match them to characters in the work the way that you could match, like, Elton to Mr. Elton. Like, obviously that's a bad example because it's the same name, but you can Christian definitely
is, Christian yeah. is oh my god, what is his name?
Frank Churchill. Yeah, like, you can definitely look at this and put it side by side and say, okay, this is this character, this is this character. I was trying, as we were watching today, I was like, I'm going to try to save some stuff to talk about when we had the microphone on. But the one thing that really gets me with this is Elton having the picture in his locker. It's not quite as, doesn't have the impact that Mr. Elton going to get a frame for the picture that she painted does. That's, like, the one thing where I was like, well, it's the best they could do, but that doesn't really work for a modern audience. They stretch it. But if you know that what was going on in Emma, it would make more sense to you. You would probably buy it better. But that's the one thing where I'm like, okay, this was the closest they could do. It would be weird for a boy to have a picture of another girl in his locker and be like, but I really like you.
I was thinking about that too. I was like, that's crazy. Like, he could have taken the picture she took of everyone and put it in his locker. I feel like that would make more sense. But he specifically took the one she took of another girl. And I was like, what are you doing? Like, that is so misleading. But it is probably the closest they could get to the painting, because painting something takes a lot more effort than just snapping a picture. Mm-hmm. So I think it makes more sense that he'd be like, oh, she painted this, I'm gonna buy a frame for it and take it, even though it is a painting of another girl. But the picture, yeah. I don't know what he was thinking.
But then again, what comes out of his mouth in this, like, we are at some point, as anyone who listens to the show knows, that we're gonna get down to favorite moment, line, scene, character. So I know we're gonna bring up one of Elton's, because that's one of the ones that makes us laugh a whole lot.
I hate Elton. I think he's a slimy, slimy, slimy man, and that doesn't change from Emma to Clueless, but he unfortunately has a really funny line in the beginning of this movie.
It's so true. It is so true. Well, as we're sitting here talking about how we spent our morning watching it, it seems kind of silly to ask you, does it still hold up? But I mean,
you know what? I actually have thoughts about this.
I'm glad.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I got thoughts knocking around in that noggin of mine. I don't know why I said that. I think that this movie is a really big 90s period piece, if that makes sense. And it feels silly to call something from the 90s a period piece, but I have no other word for it. And I think the reason that it still feels relevant today is because I feel like a lot of people in my generation really admire and feel a sort of misplaced nostalgia for the 90s. Like, I love 90s music so much, and I love 90s fashion, and that's a really, really big thing with people who are my age. And I see like on Pinterest, like, pictures of this movie. Like, people still talk about this movie, which, you know, I think that's really cool. But there are some elements of it that are a little hard for a modern audience to swallow. I think specifically the usage of the R slur throughout this movie. I forgot that they did that. And you and I looked at each other when it happened. We were like, oh, okay. Like, you just came right out and said that. Okay. Like, that sort of thing, I don't think that holds up. But yeah, it's still relevant today, I think, because of that 90s nostalgia and because it's adapted from such a classic story that the story just works. But the usage of that word is definitely something that raises eyebrows, I think.
Yes. I knew it was coming because you and I sat here and recited at least half the dialogue as we were watching. So I knew it was coming. But yeah, that is one of those things. We've discussed 80s films on the podcast this year. Those kinds of things where there's phraseology that we just do not use anymore for good reason, and then some other things do pop up in this movie, and that is just something that we should be happy we don't do and say anymore. So yeah, there are a couple of moments that would raise eyebrows for a modern audience and for someone who had never seen it before. Speaking of, who would you recommend this to?
That's a good question. I feel like this movie is so, even now, has such like a big cultural impact. I don't know if there's anyone who's gone through their life without hearing of Clueless, especially because I feel like it's like the quintessential teen rom-com. It's a really big movie in that genre. So if you're at all interested in that genre, you've definitely heard of it. So I'd say anyone who's into like that humorous, kind of quirky love story, teenage kind of movie, that's the person who should be watching this movie. And if you're into that, chances are you have heard of this movie before anyway.
So true. So true. Let's dig into the themes. The themes of this are the same themes of Emma, because it's the same story, basically. But one of the things that I really love about how the story was adapted is how Cher comes to understand that she is the one who is clueless. And it's a fun journey for the character of Emma, too. But it feels more fun in this because it's Alicia Silverstone's performance in terms of how she could be a character that you just want to slap, but instead you just want to like give her a hug. Like, she's just so cute. Like, there's moments in this, like you brought up the scene in her pajamas. Like, you know, she is presenting herself as this, like, I am a woman and I know everything and this and that. But then when she has the slightest bit of uncertainty in herself, she's just like a little toddler dancing around her father's office in her pajamas, like, Daddy, I have a problem. And you're just like, okay, you're so cute.
I mean, yeah, she's 16 years old, and I think this is something that I saw a lot when I was 16 years old and that I felt a lot when I was 16 years old, is you are not quite an adult yet, but you're not a child either. So it's like this weird in-between space, and I think a lot of people like to think that they're an adult and that they know everything and that, you know, I am a woman and I know what I'm doing, and you're 16, and when you're 16, you definitely don't have your life figured out, even if you're convinced that you do. You've barely lived any life. So I think she's very real in that sense, and she's a very dynamic character because her whole journey is coming to terms with the fact that she doesn't really have any self-awareness at all, and she doesn't know what she's doing, even though she was convinced that she did in the beginning of the movie.
Yeah, you had that great realization when we were watching the movie about how it's just so fun to see her, and it's written all over her face. All the time she looks so confused, like, but wait a minute. Like, it is presented to the audience so neatly and concisely and just in a fun way. You said it today. Like, I always forget how funny this movie is, and you're absolutely right. Like, it is just laugh out loud funny every single time. Like, how many times have we seen this movie? Like, a million times. We're still laughing out loud at this movie.
Oh, yeah. I was cackling. And I think it's important to mention that she's not stupid. Like, she is still clever, and she can still, like, talk her way out of stuff, but she is just naive. She doesn't know anything about the world because you're a teenager, you're 16 years old, and you are convinced that you know everything, and she has to learn that she doesn't, right? And it's very fun to watch her come to terms with that and mature over the course of the movie. So I really love that, and it is so funny. It's so quotable. We were, as you said before, we were just sitting here just reciting all the lines that they were saying that were so silly. Calvin Klein.
You knew it too.
Yeah, it was coming up. I was like, I love this line. What are you wearing? A dress. Says who? Calvin Klein.
Yes. So, yeah, I mean, the main thrust of the themes of this movie is definitely, like, it is one of those classic high school coming of age movies, which is so much fun. And it's shout out to Andy Williams. He and I usually chat about these high school coming of age movies. So I think that, I mean, as far as the John Hughes movies that he and I have been tackling from the 80s, like, I think this is more successful at that theme, and it definitely stands up more than those John Hughes movies, but that's a whole other discussion. You're nodding your head at me, so you...
Wait, John Hughes, what did he...
Breakfast Club.
Oh, my God, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, you're right. I agree with that. I was going to say that I think Cher is kind of an unreliable narrator because she does have a lot of narration throughout the movie, and she'll say things. She's like, I'm a totally normal teenage girl. And then she, like, has this giant house, and she has, like, a computer to pick out her clothes, which I'm sure in the 90s that was, like, completely unheard of. Like, no one who lived in a normal situation would have those things. So she, that sort of thing really hammers home the fact that she does have pretty much no self-awareness. And it's very funny to see the things that she's saying directly contradicted by what you're seeing on the screen. And I think that's a really fun way of being like, yeah, she has a lot to learn about her place in the world, sort of deal.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, this is just one of those. I mean, it is a fun movie, but it's not like it has nothing to say. I think it does have a lot to say about learning your place in the world, but also your place in your group of friends, the people that you choose to surround yourself with, and how you treat them and how you are treated by them. Because her big lesson over the course, just as Emma does with Harriet, is the way she treats Ty. You said it today, she treats her like a doll. So the way she treats Ty and the way that makes her examine her place in her social circle, who she chooses to socialize with, and the lessons she learns through her experiences with Ty over the course of the movie, it works.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. I think her relationship with Ty is really the crux of this movie, and her relationship with Harriet is very much the crux of the story, because that is her real big lesson, where she comes to terms with the fact that, oh, I was saying to everyone and I was convinced that I was doing this completely selflessly, when in fact she was just kind of using her as a doll, as something to dress up, and just ignored her feelings and her wants and desires to make her into something that Cher or Emma wanted. So I really like how they show that in this movie, and it's very true to the original story.
Yeah, for sure. We've touched a little bit on the influence that this film had, like you say, even now as a, you know, as your generation is like looking at this with like fun nostalgia and seeing it on Pinterest. But like this movie really was like a cultural moment. It was a box office success. I was shocked. I can't believe I've never heard of it. There's two musical adaptations of Clueless.
What?
Yeah. One of them is a jukebox musical that starred Dove Cameron.
Are you kidding me? I've never heard of this in my life.
Me either. We do this for a living. I've never heard of this. There's that. And then there's another adaptation. There was a TV show that ran based on it. There is a drama series that's going to get, I think, rebooted. I think Alicia Silverstone is returning for it. It's, yeah, very, like, there is a lot going on in the extended universe of Clueless, apparently, that I was not aware of. But, yeah, this is one of those movies where you can't hear that phrase as if and not know. That's like, oh, that's Clueless. Like, this, much in the same way when we talked about Inside Out this year and how core memory has now become part of the lexicon, like all of those, as if, whatever, like all of that kind of terminology.
Buggin'.
I'm bugging
oh. myself.
Like, there's all those moments in this movie that are now like iconic, that have just touched the culture and become part of the fabric of our language.
I've told you repeatedly not to call me woman.
I know.
I love how she delivers that.
I kind of ruined your life by telling you that Stacey Dash is a crazy Republican today.
Yes, I didn't know that. It broke my heart in a million pieces. Why?
So sorry to have to give you that news.
No, Dion, why would you do this?
I don't know, man. I don't know, but we will separate the art from the artist. You can still love Dion. Well, let's see. I mean, this is something we've been talking about this whole time, but we're going to get into it in specifics. What makes this film great?
Oh, boy. The aesthetics, the classic story is an adaptation of Jane Austen. You can't go wrong with Jane Austen. Can we have some commotion for the clothes? Can we have some commotion for the clothes, the soundtrack? And it's so quotable. I think when you think of quotable movies, the first one that comes to my mind is Mean Girls. And I think Mean Girls and Clueless are very sort of kindred spirits movie-wise. I think without Clueless, Mean Girls might not have been exactly what it was. I think Clueless had a lot of impact on that genre. And they are both so funny. Like, there are so many lines in this movie that are just, oh my, I actually laughed out loud watching this movie many, many, many times.
It's so true. And if we're going to talk about, as we like to say on Movieversaries, what makes it capital G great, I'm going to throw some love to the director and screenwriter, Amy Heckerling. This is, honestly, we've mentioned it before, but I'm going to say it again. It is such a beautiful reimagining of the source material. Like, it just feels so wholly original, even though you can definitely see all of the blueprints and the puzzle pieces, which, I mean, it's not easy. We've seen movies that tried to do this that fail, and she succeeded on every level. The plot is just like a perfect engine. The dialogue is amazing. It's so snappy. It's so clever. All of the characters are so distinct. It's a success from start to finish.
Absolutely agree. Absolutely agree. And even the characters that I feel don't have a one-to-one, like Murray and Dion, I don't think they have like a real counterpart in the books. They completely work in the story and they are so fun and they are such a great addition. So it's not like we have a bunch of extraneous characters that are there for no reason. I think everyone really brings something to the table.
Yeah, definitely. It's an economical story in terms of how it's told, but everyone is just firing on all cylinders. It's a like I would say it's like a perfect script. It really truly is. I mean, she won awards for it. Don't think she was nominated for an Oscar for it, which is like ridiculous, but she definitely did get, I mean, she won the award for best screenplay at the National Society of Film Critics Awards. So it was nominated for a WGA award for best screenplay. Like, it really was, I think, Oscar worthy. This screenplay is, it's great. Just so snappy and fun. It has like the energy of like a 30s screwball comedy, even though it's as you say, like so totally set in the 90s, a perfect 90s time capsule.
Yeah, I agree with everything. The dialogue is absolutely incredible in this movie. I can't say it enough. So silly, so much fun, and just delivered really well. I think everyone really brought their A game in terms of comedic acting.
Yeah, and it's like easy to forget that this was only Alicia Silverstone's second movie. This is the movie that brought Paul Rudd to the world, and we're all better for it. I mean, Brittany Murphy, the late great Brittany Murphy, just was perfect as Ty. It is, I don't know, not like people can tell. We totally love this movie. You touched on some of the shortcomings, definitely with the use of the R slur is really jarring to a modern audience. I do want to touch on it, even though we discussed it off air when we were watching it, but they do fall on gay stereotypes when Christian is introduced. But on the whole, I think that he is handled as well as he could be in a 90s movie.
I like that he's not treated as a villain by the narrative. I like that him and Cher become friends and that he is a good guy. Like when Ty gets like dangled over the like fence. I don't know what you would call it.
The ledge or something.
Yeah, the ledge at the mall. And he like pulls her down and then like threatens like the guys. He's like, what are you doing? You could get her killed. Like he is a good guy. I do think they do fall on gay stereotypes for him. But I appreciate that his character was never treated as less than.
Yeah. No, totally agree with that as well. I feel the same. It could have been so different. In that point, I think it's just like it's like cultural shorthand for this point in the 90s for them to lean on all those stereotypes so that you can kind of like get the feeling of it for an audience that might not know. Like as we discussed off air when we were watching it, like The Birdcage is 96. So having queer stories be something that could be mainstream was like just around the corner. So they do use that shorthand so that an audience can kind of guess before Cher does, because she is, as we know, clueless that Christian is gay. But yeah, I mean, even we're going to jump ahead as far as like favorite moment, line, scene, character. But when Murray jumps out with that whole monologue in the car, like it is loaded with stereotypes, but it is classic.
Oh my goodness. What does he say?
Really?
I don't remember what he says. I know he ends it with friend of Dorothy.
He ends it with friend of Dorothy. He is, oh my God, he's a disco dancing, Oscar Wilde reading, Streisand ticket holding friend of Dorothy. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, that's exactly it. I cannot believe you remembered that, because I was like, that's a lot of words.
It's a lot of words. It's a lot of words, a lot of stereotypes. But it was there so that the audience would know exactly where we were going, even if Cher had no idea at that point. So we're up to favorite facts, and I kind of broke your heart with some of them today. So I will hit up the one I told you when we were like, what? Yeah, some of the almost casting for this, the fact that Ben Affleck auditioned for Josh.
That's hysterical. I cannot imagine this movie with Ben Affleck as Josh. I feel like Ben Affleck... there's something about him that's just so innately depressing, and I think it would have thrown off the comedic rhythm of the movie.
Yeah, I can't imagine. It, we always say this, but it's just like, I can't imagine anyone in these parts except for Alicia Silverstone and Paul Rudd. Like, their chemistry is just perfect. You believe them as bickering, like, you know, antagonists, and then you see over the course of the movie how they are definitely so in love with each other. It's so perfect. I think it's also really fun that Mr. Hall, Wallace Shawn, that superstar that he is, was actually a teacher before he became an actor, which is probably why that experience makes Mr. Hall feel so real in the classroom.
Incredibly real. He was definitely getting flashbacks. He was like, oh God, I remember these days.
All the faces when she's doing her debate speeches and he's like, all right then, like the looks on his face. He is just, this is like an example of how deep the bench is on Clueless. Like, Wallace Shawn is unbelievable. Every incidental character in this is really on their A game.
Yeah, absolutely. Even the minor characters are so fun and full of energy and comedy, and it's just a joy to watch.
Most definitely. So yeah, I would say that's probably my favorite behind-the-scenes story. So, I know this is going to take a while. It's that she's looking at the script over my shoulder. She knows where we are. So this is favorite moments, favorite lines, favorite scenes, favorite characters.
Oh boy. I don't know if I can pick favorite character. I feel like everyone has a place and everyone fills their role very well. I have to say, shout out to our Mr. Woodhouse here, Cher's dad. Mr. Woodhouse is my favorite in Emma, because he's so kooky and he's like kind of pathetic, but they took him in a different direction for this and it still worked really well. He's very like crotchety and grumpy, but he does appreciate everything that Cher does for him, and he has some really good lines. When Christian comes in to pick Cher up, or like, yeah, he's picking her up for the party. And what does he say? I have a shotgun and a shovel. I doubt anyone would miss you.
I have a 45 and a shovel. I doubt anyone would miss you. Yes. But like that, right before that, though, is the, what's wrong with you, kid? Do you think the death of Sammy Davis left an opening in the Rat Pack?
It's so funny because he's just so, I mean, and even when he's on the phone, you can hear him like being grumpy and like kind of like, he's like, rah, rah.
Cher, get in here. Yeah, he is. Dan Hedaya is, he, I can't, like, it's really hard for me to not say that he's not my favorite character in this, because every moment he's on screen, he's truly a joy. He is so very funny in this movie. It's just like a perfect acting job from like an icon at this point. Like, he is in like a million 90s movies, 2000s movies, all kinds of movies. He is just, I love him. And this is probably one of his best roles.
I gotta say, special shout out to Alicia Silverstone for her portrayal of Cher. She really sells it. I think she's absolutely perfect for this role. And yeah, it's written all over her face, and she has just such this sweet way of talking. She's like, yeah, I'm a totally normal teenage girl, and I go to Beverly Hills High School. And it's like, it's so fun. And she just nails every aspect of it. It's great. I can't talk highly enough of her performance.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we can discuss Paul Rudd here as well. Paul Rudd is wonderful in this movie. Like, thank goodness the world needed Paul Rudd.
He has a master's degree in urinalism in this movie. He went to the most prestigious university. I'm sorry.
Oh man.
Hold on, I have more of these.
Oh, good, great. Oh, boy.
He's the mayor of Urinetown. The king of Urnia.
Oh, boy. Oh, man. Well.
Sorry.
No. It's so good. It's so good.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, he's in the car for another one of my favorite parts. I remember Mel Gibson accurately, and he didn't say that. That Polonius guy did. One of those moments where you're like, Cher, don't write her off. She's not as stupid as she seems.
Absolutely. I actually wrote that down as being like one of my favorite little moments where she corrects that girl. They never give her a name. It's the girl that Josh is hanging out with. And then he like kind of hides a smile.
Yes. Yes. 100%. There's one that is kind of underrated, but you laughed out loud at today. The overwhelming sense of ickiness.
I love the overwhelming sense of ickiness line. It's so funny. It's such a Cher way to say, I feel bad. I had an overwhelming sense of ickiness.
It's so good. Oh, like there's 1,000 lines. We've already done a whole bunch of them, but this movie is endlessly quotable. It's probably memed to death on the internet for being endlessly quotable, but that's part of the reason why it endures. Favorite moment. Oh, you know what moment we really shouldn't leave without talking about is when she's walking through Rodeo Drive depressed and All By Myself is playing, because you can't have a rom-com without All By Myself playing in the background at least once. And then when she realizes she loves Josh, the lights turn on and the fountain turns on and there's the fanfare from the trumpets. Like, it's so silly and fun.
Yeah, absolute cinema. Every time that scene comes on, I'm like, yes, woo! When she is walking down and she's like talking about, oh, I'm so confused. And then she sees the outfit in the window. She goes, I wonder if they have that in my size. And then it cuts to her and she's still walking, but this time she has a bag.
So they had it in her size. Oh, yeah. Just like toward the beginning of the movie, they make an awful lot of jokes about Cher shopping, but it's fine. That's just the easy thing to joke about. But yeah, I'm just like, I have direction. And Josh is like, yeah, towards the mall.
They have some really great like antagonistic one-liners towards each other. I can't recall any specifically, but just overall, they have a really good, like, I want to say like tennis dynamic, where it's like, insult, like back and forth.
It's a 30 screwball comedy just set in the 90s. That's the vibe of their dialogue, and it's just perfect. Also want to shout out the first time we meet Dion, and Cher says they're best friends because they know what it's like for people to be jealous of them. And also, they're both named after formerly famous singers who now do infomercials. Yeah. Cher and Dionne Warwick.
That whole intro scene is so, so, so funny and so good. It really sets the tone for the whole movie. And her narration is just so silly. It's so great. Because we both know what it's like for people to be jealous of us.
And then the very, very opening scene, it always makes me giggle now, thinking of like somebody your age, the way she says, I know you're probably thinking this is a Noxzema commercial. You have absolutely no concept what that means. Yeah, Noxzema is a facial cleanser, and that's what the commercials looked like. It was just like kids having fun in the pool, and we're going to, you know, so that whole montage of them at the mall, partying, having fun, swimming in the pool, like, that was just set to Kids in America. Like, what a great way to open the movie. But that was looked just like a Noxzema commercial. And the fact that the first line of dialogue in the movie is, I bet you're thinking this is a Noxzema commercial, was just so perfectly on the nose, letting you know what you were getting into with this movie. And it just set the scene perfectly.
Unfortunately, we do have to discuss Elton's absolute banger of a line in the beginning of the movie, which is, it's after Cher says her debate, which, by the way, Haitians.
Oh, God, the Haitians. And may I remind you, it doesn't say RSVP on the Statue of Liberty.
I definitely saw somewhere that Alicia Silverstone actually didn't know how to pronounce Haitians, and they just kept it in because it was perfectly on brand for Cher.
That's a good fact. That's a great behind the scenes fact. Oh man. You know, and it does. It just makes it so funny.
Okay, so and we looked at each other because every time we play that game where you have to like explain stuff without saying the word, we start with, okay, so
both of us do it. It's like in our bloodstream. Okay, so
anyway, it's Cher saying her, there is no RSVP on the Statue of Liberty, that whole speech. And afterwards, the teacher is like, does anyone have anything to say about that? And Elton raises his hand and he goes, my foot hurts. Can I go to the nurse?
Like, it shouldn't be as funny as it is, but it's just the way he says it. He's so belligerent about it. He's just so like, my foot hurts. I don't know. It's just one of those things. Maybe it's very possible that you and I think it's hilarious and the rest of the world doesn't.
It just really got us this time. I feel like I never really listened to that line. And this time I was like, wait, that's hilarious.
Because poor Mr. Hall, he's just always, you know, does anyone have anything relevant to say to what we're talking about? And no one ever does. Like, anytime he asks that question over the course of the movie, nobody says anything that has anything to do with whatever they're debating. It is very true to high school.
Absolutely. I will say, over the course of this watch specifically, I've grown a fondness for the background romances that are happening. Dion and Murphy, I think they have such a fun dynamic, and I love that they kind of pretend drama in public, but then secretly they are very in love. And Ty and, oh my goodness, what is his name?
Travis.
Yes, they are so sweet together, and it just kills you this whole movie because Cher is so against them being together, but they really want to be together, and thankfully they do end up with each other. So that's nice. Very true to Emma as well. That's straight out of Emma. That's Harriet and her farmer boy that Emma does not want her to be with.
Yeah, it's really fun. I mean, again, it does... It's no mistake that they take all of these classic stories and set them in a high school because of how high school society does follow that same kind of hierarchy. So it's very easy to say that, like, you know, Robert Barton was a farmer and he was below Harriet's station. So Emma was going to steer her towards someone that she thought was more suitable. And Travis is a stoner at the beginning of the movie, even though in a very like sweet and nice way, then he joins a program with, I forget how many steps. That's so cute. That part is cute too. 12? How did you know? Lucky guess. Like, that is very cute. So when Travis goes into treatment for his drug problem and then becomes a more serious skater, and Cher is also at this point making over her soul, I'm going to do a makeover for my soul. So now she is more receptive to, I almost said to Harriet, she's more receptive to Ty and to Travis and their romance.
Oh my god, makeover for my soul. That line also really got me this time. That's so funny. This time I was going to do a makeover for my soul.
Love her.
It's just so perfectly Cher.
Definitely. Absolutely. Yeah. So we could sit here and probably recite this whole movie, but we will spare you, dear listener. So there's only one more thing to do, and I feel like this is also going to be kind of a banger of a discussion because there's a lot of options. And we can give each option some time and give them some flowers. So the MVP of Clueless. So it can be anyone. It could be a director, actor, etc. I have a couple of people I definitely want to shout out, but do you have any thoughts to start us off?
I mean, just right off the bat, I gotta shout out once again Alicia Silverstone, because this movie lives and dies on her performance. She is on screen the whole time. She has to be snappy, she has to be comedic, she has to be perfectly naive, she has to be a spoiled brat, but sort of lovable at the same time. And for... this was very early on in her acting career. I believe she was very young in this movie, and she just absolutely kills it. I can think of no one else who could be Cher, and you need a good Cher for this movie to work. So, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, when you look at the people who were considered before they cast Alicia Silverstone, they saw Alicia Witt, which you don't even know who she is. She was in a TV show. So, yeah. Kerry Russell, who was also in a TV show. She was in Felicity. Tiffany Thiessen, she was Kelly from Saved by the Bell. So she actually wouldn't have been that bad. I actually would have been okay with that. Gwyneth Paltrow, which is crazy pants. Angelina Jolie.
She was Emma, wasn't she? Gwyneth Paltrow played Emma.
Gwyneth Paltrow played Emma, yes. Yeah. Around this time. Yeah. So that's not entirely out of left field, but for this character, for Cher, I would not. I mean, then they also saw Reese Witherspoon, which she was like doing a lot of these kind of movies at the time, so I can see that. But yeah, I'm very happy that it says that the studio did not pressure Amy Heckerling to cast a big star, and for that reason she was able to cast Alicia Silverstone, to everyone's credit, to the world's credit, because Cher is an amazing creation. Love her. I would like to put up Amy Heckerling for MVP for discussion, because you know, obviously this was her idea. She wrote it. She directed it. She had a lot of experience in high school. She also did Fast Times at Ridgemont High. So this is somebody who knew what she was doing as far as high school movies and making them feel realistic and grounded. And as silly as this is, it is realistic and it is grounded for people with a lot of money.
I mean, I think it's a very heightened display of high school, and, you know, I didn't grow up in Beverly Hills, so I don't know how accurate it is to living in Beverly Hills, but, I mean, it is so fun, and it does feel, everyone feels real to, like, how teenagers would act, which I really appreciate.
She did go to Beverly Hills High and sit in on classes to watch the students so that she could get an idea of how to write them, because, you know, Fast Times was in the 80s. This is now the 90s. High school is high school. I don't think it ever really changes, but she just wanted to see what the current state of high school was. And that's why Cher spends so much time in the movie grooming herself, because she noticed that all of the girls were constantly touching up their makeup, brushing their hair, grooming themselves constantly. So that's where that little Cher character angle comes from her viewing the students at Beverly Hills High. Yeah, I would also like to shout out, and I know you will not, you will not disagree with me. It feels weird to make him the MVP, but I want to shout out Dan Hedaya for at least talk about in this MVP category, because Mel is an amazing character and he nails it.
He's just so funny. Like, it's just so good. And he gives 110% in every season. It's just so great. Because he does the comedy really well, but then when we get towards the end and he has, like, that talk with Cher where he's like, you're so beautiful, you're so amazing, I don't know why any boy wouldn't, like, love you, and you, like, keep this house running, you make sure that I eat right, and he, like, gives her props for really keeping the house going, which is true of Emma as well. And Emma, she is very attentive to her father's needs, and she basically runs the household, and that's what Cher does too. And it's kind of a through line through the whole movie where she's like, daddy, you can't eat that, daddy, you need to, you know, drink orange juice, daddy, you need to do this, you need to do that, you need to go to the doctor, like, you need to get your flu shot. She's just making sure that he's taking care of himself, and it's nice to have him acknowledge that at the end. And he does it with such tenderness, like, even though he is so prickly, he really does love her, and he loves Josh, and he's very happy that they get together at the end. He's 100% down with this. I think he's like, you will be my son if you like it or not.
Yes, that's so true. You mentioned that while we were watching, and I was like, oh yeah, that is true. He's like, he's been trying to get this kid in his house the whole movie, and now he's like, my master plan is starting to work. Yes. I mean, we didn't really get into it. I wouldn't label it as a shortcoming, and I don't know if it's really a thing. Do you think it would kind of freak people out that he's technically, Josh, we should clarify it, he's her ex-stepbrother, so there's no blood relation between them. Mel was married to his mom at some point, but now they are divorced, And as another thing, they make you love Mel, like, from the beginning, because Cher is complaining that Josh is coming over, and he says, you divorce wives, you don't divorce children. So you can tell, even though as grumpy as Mel is, like, he, you know, he feels very strongly toward Josh. He treats him as a member of the family. And it is presented as, they, you said they have to say, like, you're like, but it's like, you're not my brother. Like, they're very clear about it.
Oh, yeah. They remind you continuously, because Cher's like, you were barely even married to his mother. So I guess it was maybe like 6 months max or something like that. And then later on, when like sparks are flying, they have to re-remind you. And she's like, you're not my brother. Like, it's a whole thing. And it does feel a little weird. I do know that there are definitely people that find it strange and off-putting, and I absolutely do not begrudge that. I know the reason they did it is because in Emma, they are brother and sister-in-law. Mm-hmm. So it's like kind of the same dynamic where they're like family but not really family. Like, there is no blood relation, but they have like family ties, I guess. So Emma and Mr. Knightley. So I know that's why they did it. I think he could have worked better. Not better, it, just as well as maybe like a close family friend or like a neighbor, and that wouldn't be as weird to people, but I understand why they did it the way they did, because they're adapting Emma.
Yeah, I think they needed to try to keep it as close to that source material as possible. But yeah, it would have worked if, like, let's say he was like an intern in her dad's office, because half the movie has people from Mel's office. They are working on the big lawsuit. So that would have worked, but would he have felt free to criticize her the way that he did if he was just like an intern? You know, I think it's important for his place in the story that they did have that like family, not family connection, because then he is able to speak freely to her. And so much of their, and Emma and Mr. Knightley's mm-hmm. relationship is about him being the only person who criticizes her. So yeah, that's probably why they had to do it.
Probably. And I agree that that sort of kind of relationship, especially in the original book, where Mr. Knightley is the only person who can be like, you are making the wrong choice, like, this is not what you should be doing right now, you're being selfish, like, he absolutely chews her out multiple times in the original book, and honestly deserved. She's not doing what she's supposed to be doing, right? But that's why they work so well together, because he's not afraid to call her out, and they like make each other better in that way, because she also gives it back to him. And the only reason they could really do that is because they were close, like they had a connection between them in some way, so he was able to speak freely to her in that way, and she was able to speak freely to him. So I get why they did it. I also understand why people would be freaked out about it.
Yeah, so that maybe should be filed slightly under shortcomings, but honestly, I think the movie is strong enough and the performances are strong enough that it's, you know, they make you move past it. If you have any feeling of, ugh, they, you know, it moves past it, you're okay with it. I am anyway. So are you. That's the only opinion that matters. It's fine. So
that's crazy.
So, yeah, I mean, If I had to choose one MVP, I will go with Amy Heckerling.
I'm keeping Alicia Silverstone.
I like it. That's good. Well, this has been a really fun day. Is there anything else we didn't mention that you kind of want to bring up about Clueless before we wrap things up?
Can I talk about how much I hate Elton?
You absolutely can. Because please do.
He's the worst. Like, he sucks so bad. He sucks in the original, but I somehow hate him more. I think it's because it's so real. Like, this is a boy that I have encountered before. Like, in Emma, there's enough, I think, distance between us and the Regency era that we hate him, right? But it's not like I've met a man who acts exactly like this before. I have met Elton in Clueless before. He sucks. He is so horned up for Cher, and he traps her in a car with him, and he, like, genuinely, like, it's assault. Like, he starts kissing her, and she doesn't want him to do it. She repeatedly tells him no. She shoves him off, and he still keeps doing it, and then he he just leaves her at a gas station, and then she gets robbed. Like, he is the worst. I hate him so much. And even though he has that one funny line, it does not redeem him. I do not like him.
All right, thank you for bringing that up, because you're absolutely right. We should talk about that scene. And yeah, that's another moment where you see Cher for the woman that she is, where she is just like, stop it. And then she gets out of the car. And then even though he's like, you know, get back in the car. And it is funny when he's like, fine. And he drives away and she's like, hey, where are you going? Like, that's just like, it's a Cherism. It's just fun. But yeah, like that whole scene, obviously this is a comedy and it doesn't go down a route that it could have in a different movie. Thank goodness. But yeah, it's very important that she has the agency to get him off of her and get out of the car.
Yeah, and he shouldn't have done that in the first place, because that is creepy and gross. I don't like him. I hate him.
Yes. We are an anti-Elton podcast.
Anti-Elton! Anti-Elton!
Yeah, no, that's good. Let's sneak in some Elton hate right at the end. That's a very worthy use of our time. She's giving him the thumbs down right now. Well, yeah. Is there anything else? I'm glad we got that in. I forgot to bring him up before.
I like when she becomes the captain of the beach cleanup and she's dragging all this stuff out and her dad's like, why are you bringing your skis? And she's like, Daddy, some people lost everything. You don't think that includes sporting equipment?
Yes. That's part of the makeover for her soul.
And it's so great. And I do love watching her do something for purely selfless reasons. I do think she was like, oh no, I have been very selfish, right? Because she talks about, oh, I'm doing so many good deeds. And it's like, these are not good deeds, because ultimately they all benefit her. And it's all kind of like a mastermind kind of move of like, okay, I'll do this and I'll look really good and it will do good things for me, right? That's the reason she's doing it. That's the motivation. She gets Miss Geis and Mr. Hall together purely so that her grades can improve. She makes over Ty so that she can have like a little doll. And as Josh calls it out, he's like, so you have someone just as clueless as you are to worship you, I think he says, which is true. And she resists Ty and Travis getting together, because I don't even really know why she does that. I think it's part of like living vicariously through Ty, that she's like, he's not good enough for you. Like, you're my doll, right? I'm going to make you live the best life that I want you to live, even though that's not what Ty really wants. And Ty wants to be with Travis, and she's not letting her do that because she is only looking out for what she wants and not what her friend wants, right? So she's doing all these quote-unquote good deeds, but really it's pretty selfish of her when you think about it. And when she realizes this, she's like, oh no. And then she like does a makeover for her soul and tries to be better. And I think it's so sweet how she raises her hand in class and she's like, how can I help? How can I help with the beach cleanup? And that's not really going to do anything for her. No one else in class is interested in the beach cleanup. It's not going to get her social points. She's just doing it to help. And I think that is a real turning point for her character. And I don't know. I thought that was cute.
It is. It's great. And you're reminding me of a great line, another great line that we forgot to mention before. So I'm glad that you brought that up. This is awesome. But yeah, you're absolutely right in that she is giving herself props for doing all of these quote unquote good deeds, but it is all selfish and all misguided. And then she does turn around and become a true helper and good deed doer, shall we say. But yeah, that line at the party where she's like, it's like what they say, 'tis a far, far better thing doing stuff for other people. Oh, God. It's like only this movie could misquote Dickens and make it so funny.
And it's very Emma. That whole story, you know, all of this is adapted from Emma. And Emma is exactly the same way, where she's like, oh, I'm a matchmaker, I'm doing all this stuff for other people, but really it's to boost her ego the whole time. And she has to learn and grow from her mistakes, and that's what Cher does.
Yep. I think we are ready to close the book on Clueless, but happy 30th anniversary.
Thanks.
Thanks
so much.
Thanks for being here with me.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, and thank you for tuning in. We very much hope you've enjoyed the show. If you have, please subscribe to Movieversaries and give us a rating and a review wherever you can. And while you're here, check out the show notes. You'll find links to all of our things that we're doing, as well as a link to the Discord where you can come and have a chat with us. Thanks again for your company, and we'll see you for the next installment of Movieversaries.